shine, little Uber, liver, liver, leave us.
Good evening and welcome to As the Worm Turns. You're tuned in to KVNF's live call-in gardening show. I'm your host, Jill Spears. Here, of course, with my favorite gardeners, it's Lance and Lulu in the house. Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening, everybody.
And we have one of our favorite guests, returning worms. It's Ron Godin in the house tonight. Good evening, Ron.
Good evening. Thanks for having me.
Ron is our resident worm soil scientist, and always like when he's on the show because greens a great perspective and a lot of good information. Formerly of the CSU Extension Office. Up on the Mesa here in the North Fork.
And in Delta.
And you do a lot of independent work, and you travel all over the world helping people with their soil,
Pretty much. Yep, I do still.
Still. And what's your trip this year? Where are you heading?
I'm heading to Eastern Canada to help them with hops and other stuff, soil stuff, and also to the Ukraine.
Ooh, that's right. That's his area, the Ukraine.
That's the breadbasket of Eurasia.
Mm-hmm. And let me give you the phone numbers because I know you've got a lot of good information and people want to pick your brain. So Jeff's ready to take your call and Ron's and Lulu and Lance are ready to chat it up.
Great.
970-527-4868, 1-866-KVNF. Now you can email worm@kvnf.org.
I know, don't you love it?
Great. There's a worm theme going on here or something.
I know, it's great.
Who came up with that?
I don't know, but we love it.
We love you. Yeah. Okay, so let me ask you about the Ukraine, because you've been going there a while, and we've been talking hops as well. But what have you seen transform in the Ukraine, and what's some of the work that's made that happen with soil?
What I'm seeing happening over the long term is a reduction in fertility. They want to be rich farmers like the American farmers, which is a problem in the first place. But they're using American methods and giant tractors and synthetic fertilizers. And what's going on is, from working with some labs around the Ukraine over the last 10 years, the organic matter in the soil has gone down about 6%.
Wow.
At the height of the Soviet Union, when they were an agrarian society, the organic matter was about 16 to 18%. Now we're in the 8 to 6 range.
Wow.
From using synthetic fertilizers. There's not many people that do home gardens still do organic, but the commercials are all doing synthetic.
Wow, that's a tough nut to crack.
Huh? Yeah. It is. It's a scary nut to see.
All right.
Oh, good. So that they can have algae blooms in the Mediterranean. You know, let's just screw up another sea. Why not? Hey.
You know.
I'm sorry. That was really.
All right. Well, that's why we send Ron over there.
Right. To straighten them out.
I'm trying, and it's working. Mm-hmm. They're slowly saying, you know, you're right. What are we doing? Why are we could be putting, we grow all these animals, and we have all this manure. Why don't we put that on there instead of this fertilizer? Mm-hmm. But the fertilizer is easy. It's cheap. But they're starting to put the manure back and starting to go back to some of the old practices that they had, cover crops. But it's tough. It's going to the same place and seeing a little bit of change every year.
I'm curious. Where's all their chemical fertilizers coming from?
From Europe.
So yeah, here they have Germany. A product, waste products. Organic,
right?
And they're shipping all this stuff in because there's a semblance of easiness,
right?
Yeah,
of modernity,
yeah, right.
But don't take into account how far it's been shipped.
No, they're just looking at dollars and cents, and the Ukrainian government wants hard dollars, hard cash income, and so they export just tons and tons of corn and soybeans. They're on the corn and soybean treadmill now in the main part of the country.
Yeah, and I just Googled it on Google Earth to check out exactly where it is. And so it really is in the Black Sea, not the Mediterranean.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's even more landlocked and smaller.
Well, the great thing is we're going to talk about how some of those processes like cover crops and that kind of thing really work over here. Right today.
Yeah.
All right. 527-4868-1866 KVNF now. Lance, let's talk about cold and heat? Because that was one of your questions that was we were curious about.
When Ron was here in the spring, in the cold soils, there were certain minerals, I don't recall which, were not available because it was cold. So was there any minerals not available when it's hot?
That's a good question. The minerals that are not available when it's cold mostly is phosphorus.
Okay.
And that's pretty much the predominant one that's not available when it's cold. You'll see the leaves on new plants when it's still chilly, mostly the your brassicas and the cold crops will have purpling in the leaves.
Oh, yeah.
And that's from a lack of phosphorus, but it's cold-induced. It's not necessarily because there's not enough in the soil. Okay. It's just because it's cold. If it goes near freezing every night for a week, you're going to see purpling on your broccoli and cauliflower, even though there's plenty of phosphorus in the ground. As far as heat goes, there are no nutrients that I know of that get impeded by heat. Our more immediate problem is a very high pH in our soils from the lime. And what that does is that stops the metal micronutrients, iron, manganese, copper, and those zinc from being taken up, because in the soil with a high pH, they just turn into a rock and the plants can't get at them. So the way to change that is to add more organic matter in the soil, or if you get a particular problem, like I have a tree that turns yellow late in the summer just because we water with, just regular, our well water is pretty high in pH. And so it turns yellow in lateness. So I water with like a quart of just store-bought vinegar and a 5-gallon bucket of water, and I water that 2 or 3 times on the tree, and it comes back green again.
Changing that pH.
Bring the pH down a little bit of acid.
Yeah, I had a notorious pear tree that is probably going to end up getting cut down this year.
Oh.
Well, it's always sick.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's perpetually sick. But speaking to the soil and the iron, I put in a chelated iron.
Right, that's
and that worked like a charm. That was spectacular. Mm-hmm. So that cured that problem, and then it got another one.
Oh.
It's one of those things where sometimes you really do feel like you're shoveling doo-doo against the tide.
And it could be just the variety also, because a lot of old pear groves, like from more than 100 years ago, in the corners of some of these hay fields.
Sure.
And they're doing fine. The pears are
pretty tart. Two pears. I have two pear trees in the yard. One gets no attention at all, and it's fabulous. And this one gets all the attention in the world, and it's
not doing well, to say the least.
It's out of there. It's cramping my style, man. I gotta go. Well, you're out of there.
I've gotten the habit, in the fall, because I'm watering with well water also, that I'll buy 50, 100 pounds of sulfur, soil sulfur. And
that's
I spread that out throughout the entire garden.
That's
not just my
brokerets,
but the grapevines and fruit trees.
Yeah, everything you use your well water on can use sulfur.
Okay.
What happens is sulfur doesn't bring the pH down. But when it gets in the soil, the bugs in the soil convert it to sulfate. Which is an oxidized form, but we get sulfuric acid as a byproduct. So it adds acid to the soil, which brings the pH down, which is really good to put sulfur down every year. We were putting down, like per acre on our peach trees at the research station, about 200 pounds an acre to keep the yellow out of the peach trees.
Wow. So do you test the water? Do you test your well water then to know what
you can test your water, and also you can also test your soil.
Your soil, right.
But you can test the water with just a pH meter or even these pH strips that you buy for $2 or $3
pretty
and
easily.
See where
pH
it is.
Testers anywhere, and you just get a little water in the tube and put the little thing in, and then
And sulfur is really cheap.
Yeah, sulfur is inexpensive in 50-pound bags. Goes a long way.
Yeah.
How do you put it on? Do you have a special device? Sprinkler?
Yeah, it's called a hand.
It's called a hand?
Yeah.
Right. That's about perfect.
Just like you're spreading seed.
Just fling it out there.
And you don't even have to turn it in, because the winter moisture will work it into
we'll
the soil.
Push it in,
you don't need to
yeah.
till it in.
Yeah.
Even.
Yeah. Go get some.
So is the timing of that around this
now?
Time of the year?
This is a good time if you want to. Yep. Or once your
ready.
Crops are done, because my tomatoes are still growing, so you could put it down, but it's not. It's not necessary now, but just once your crop is finished, you can put it down.
And if you put it down on top of, you know, the whatever you've got left in your garden, the leaves, the straw, the manure, the whatever, I never have bare soil.
Right?
So
nice.
Yeah. I mean, I've always got something covering it, hopefully. And so is it okay to put it down on top
of
that?
Yeah. The water will – they're like little tablets. They look like little – baby aspirin tablets is what it comes like. And when the water hits it, it'll start dissolving it and work it into the soil from the rain or
I'm getting some.
Snow. Or yeah, it's really good for these soils around here. It's really good to use the sulfur.
Get me some. Oh, boy.
All right. You're listening to As the Worm Turns and our special guest, Ron Godin, tonight's soil scientist. And you can call up live 970-527-4868 or 1-866-KVNF now. And, we're winding things down, but now's the time to really be thinking about that soil health.
Yeah, now's the time to be preparing also for – or thinking about preparing for winter.
Right.
And I've just got a little recipe that I wanted to share with folks to either now to plant a cover crop once your food crop is done or – once your food crop is done, to use see if you can find some alfalfa hay.
Oh, I was thinking about that today.
And that is the perfect thing, and you can either split it up into little flakes or whatever you kind of call it, pancakes, and put that on top of the soil, or just put the whole bale on top of the soil if you've got a small garden.
Okay.
And just let it sit all winter long, because what that does quite a few things. First, it's going to keep the soil from freezing. It's going to insulate the soil. And so the bugs will keep working. They'll slow down, but they'll keep working. But they'll start breaking down the alfalfa plus the other organic matter you have in the soil. So it'll give you some good nutrients to start a good spring crop.
Yeah.
But the insulation is what keeps the bugs working all winter long.
Plus, they'll
start eating that alfalfa and breaking it down at the same time.
And,
that's the best stuff.
You end up with this dirt under the hay bale or alfalfa bale that's just incredible.
Yeah, just black soil.
It's just black and it's loose and it's soft.
That's one of your tricks. You do that pretty regularly,
don't you? Yeah, I do it a lot.
And it needs to be an alfalfa hay bale.
You can do grass hay, but alfalfa is better because it's got a lot more nutrients and it breaks down quicker.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I use whatever I can get that somebody's got hanging around.
Right.
Yeah. And then if I feel like I need to supplement a little, maybe I'll go and volunteer to pick up some horse turds somewhere and spread those around on top. And just spread them, you know, not even break them down, you know, just throw them out on top
You need both. You need the alfalfa and the horse to break down the horse manure because horse manure doesn't typically break down by itself because there's not enough nitrogen in it. So the alfalfa will provide enough nitrogen to break down the horse manure at the same time.
Yeah, it just kind of goes in too because after the winter it's pretty broken down. And so is whatever I've put on, whether it's alfalfa or hay. And I never use oat straw except in the chicken yard and I use it there. But and then you just can till it in at the crack of spring. And
That sounds like a pretty straightforward solution to keep bugs working all winter long.
If you have a small space, because, you know, when we were just talking before the show about if you have a lot of space and you have cover crop and you can
You can rotate the cover.
Then you're great, you know. But when you're working in a smaller space.
Yeah, there's just no room to have four rotations or five.
Yeah.
Or,
Yeah, I've discouraged people that have small gardens to do cover crops. You can get a lot of organic matter in that. But the larger gardens, you do those rotations.
Yeah, you can do a rotation like yours. You've got your bay, your rows all lined out, your bays, whatever, and you just rotate through.
I'm moving them around, and I got some cover crop planted already.
What are you doing? The field peas?
Well, the field pea is won't winter over. So that will probably be either just laid there, dried out all winter, or I'll till it in, whatever. But I just planted rye in the area where I'm going to plant potatoes next year because
okay.
potatoes do really good after a rye crop. And also, that was where the corn was. So potatoes don't like high nitrogen, but they want good soil. So mm-hmm. corn takes some nitrogen, but it's still good soil.
Right. Plus your
interesting.
Plus your rye will take up leftover nitrogen
mm-hmm.
that's yep. from the corn and use it for that. That's yeah. great.
Was corn, now it's rye, going to be potatoes. I like it.
Sounds like a country western.
It's coming.
It's going to be potatoes.
All right. And I'm going to give the phone numbers, 527-4868-1866-KVNF now. Is there a preferred cover crop, or does that change up depending on where you're putting it, like mm-hmm. in Lance's situation, when what you're trying to change in the soil?
Yes and no.
Okay.
We'll let Lance answer one of them. Probably.
What's that?
Which ones are specific? Like you were just mentioning that you were using rye because you're going into potatoes.
Potatoes. Well, and peas. That's I had dry beans in there, and I it was too early to just let it sit dormant. So I planted the peas. It's a field pea. Yellow pea, or I think another name for it is trapper pea, and it's not winter hardy. But if I was going to go for a winter one, I'd do Austin winter pea
mm-hmm.
mixed with rye. Or, you know, yeah. if you don't have rye, you can use wheat, winter wheat. Right. You can use spelt.
Any kind of grain.
Any type of winter grain. You can use even acorn. I have a lot of acorn. And it's very hard to hole, so I might not right. actually it might turn into chicken food, you know. But
there you go.
But you can do those. Vetch is really good.
Vetch is a real good one. Also, yeah. If your following crop needs a lot of nitrogen because it fixes nitrogen, hairy vetch works real mm-hmm. good. It's one of the things you should use if you're following with a high nitrogen using
yeah,
crop.
Yeah, hairy vetch
like corn.
And you yeah. can inoculate it. Mm-hmm. There's the different inoculants for the different legumes. You know, peas. I don't know. Vetch is probably different than peas.
Yep. There's a pea and bean one, a vetch, and an alfalfa
okay.
ones.
You know, and what's really funny is locust trees will fix nitrogen. Alder trees will fix nitrogen.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. There's another one. I think, Russian carragana, Siberian pea shrub.
Siberian pea shrub, yeah.
Yeah, but you got to have the
right
inoculant for it.
And you can find it. You can mm-hmm. find the right inoculant, and it's fairly easy to find. And it doesn't take much. You can, you know, a 1 pound or a half pound inoculate a giant garden. And if you keep using it, like if you go back to peas
mm-hmm.
once every 3 or 4 years in the same place, you don't have to keep re-inoculating.
Yeah.
It'll survive in the soil for 3 or 4 years without re-inoculating this bacteria.
Yeah. I've noticed my, like, pole beans and dry beans and stuff, I don't see the nodules that much. But the clovers, especially the black metic.
Oh, that's and the, my favorite.
Burr clovers and the red clovers that come up, volunteers, they have a lot.
And the reason, Mike, there's maybe two reasons. One is that peas and beans typically don't fix a lot of nitrogen mm-hmm. in and of themselves. But if there's a lot of nitrogen in the soil already mm-hmm. when you plant, and even if you have the inoculant, this rhizobia bacteria, it's not going to fix anything. It's just going to take nitrogen right out of the soil mm-hmm. if there's a lot of it. But the other one, like the clovers, they grow fast and they grow a lot of green stuff, so they need a lot of nitrogen.
Okay.
So that may be why they're fixing it, is because they need more mm-hmm. than a bean or a pea does.
I noticed the Austrian winter pea really fixes a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it has a long growing season. Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't plant Austrian winter pea right now.
Too late?
You would not?
No, it's too early. If it gets too tall, it winter kills.
All right.
Okay.
You only want it about 2 or 3 inches going into winter.
So you still got the winter.
Yeah, it's as simple as that.
And you can plant cover crop up till when? The first?
It depends.
Yeah, it
depends on what you're
rye planting. You can uh-huh. plant into November. Most of mm-hmm. these other ones have to be in by mid-October.
Okay, so we're coming up on.
Mm-hmm. But Ron, tell us about the multiple cover crop seeds.
That's what they're doing a lot of research on now, is multi-species cover crop from 5 and 6 different species up to, some guys are trying 18 and 20 different species at a time. And what they're trying to do.
That's fabulous.
Yeah, they break them down into 5 different groups just because it makes it easy to comprehend how they figure it out. There's warm season grasses, cool season grasses, warm season broadleaves and cool season broadleaves, and legumes. And so you need to have at least one of each in this mix mm-hmm. to make it work well. Typically, they say 8 is about the minimum number of species that you want. And the reason we're doing this or trying to do this is to get the root systems of these 5 or 10 or 20 different species to take up all the different niches in the soil that are there. So we can increase, and what that's going to do is increase the organic matter in the soil without tilling. And we want to reduce the tilling as much as possible. Mm-hmm. So they'll cut the tops and let it either sit and decompose for organic matter or use it for mulch or lots of other stuff, but don't till and let the roots break down because cover crops are all annual crops. We don't do perennial, obviously, covers for in the garden.
Mm-hmm.
And so the amount of root mass that they produce at, you know, 8 to 10 different species is wow. just amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just amazing, the amount of root mass it produces. And we are seeing increases in the organic matter in the soil mm-hmm. without tilling.
Wow.
But it's just kind of in its infancy as far as researching it and getting the real particulars of how to make it work.
Uh-huh. And would you plant it now or would you?
I would plant it now, mm-hmm. now up until the middle of October. Mm-hmm. I may have started a bit early because of the water situation's a bit
sure.
yeah.
iffy.
Yeah,
right
I was just going to ask about that. So how do you encourage irrigating it? Or I mean,
yes, because you're not going to, you can wait for it to rain, but then if it's, you know, late October before it starts to rain, that's yeah, or it's just sit there until it does rain,
right, okay.
and then it'll freeze. Or okay. if it's late October, it may germinate and just freeze right out.
Right.
So I encourage people to plant it around the first 2 weeks of September.
Right.
So we get one or two irrigations on it right. and get it up and going, and then it can survive dry a
in
bit
normal
better.
Time, mm-hmm. But this year is just,
yeah,
it's
a
wash.
Just crazy
yeah.
dry.
Yeah.
yeah. I'm wondering of the broadleaves. What mm-hmm. kinds of broadleaves?
Yeah, what are we talking about with those?
Just off the top of my head, ouch.
the tip of your elbow.
We stuck the chum.
Buckwheat is a favorite.
Buckwheat, yeah.
Because okay. it produces a lot. Plus, it, you know, it provides flowers for honey. I'd have to look at my list. I mm-hmm. should have.
But, yeah.
but you can go online, and they have cover crop. Like a periodic table of cover crops,
mm-hmm.
of different mm-hmm. grasses, cool season, warm season. So it's really easy to understand. All the cool seasons are in one go. And there's just literally hundreds of
yeah.
different kinds of cover crops that you can have access to. And now there's even companies that will make a mix for you and whatever, put whatever you want in it. And one company has a cover crop calculator. And you put in, I want 20% wow. rye and 10% barley and
uh-huh.
some hairy vetch, and it'll mix it all for you
oh,
and give
wow.
you an idea
mm-hmm.
what's going to come out of it, how much it costs, and
mm-hmm.
how much of each you got to plant.
Right?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's spectacular.
And you want that cover crop to be going and established because it does a lot of like basic things besides changing the soil, like collecting snow for moisture.
Correct.
And
yep. If it's up and going, it'll collect snow for winter moisture. It may insulate the soil depending
right.
on how thick it is. I've done a lot of work with rye, and if we used to plant it like late in the first or second week of September, and it'd be up about 8 inches or so, and you can't see any soil
mm-hmm.
through the rye. It's nice and thick, and it just covers that soil so it doesn't blow in the winter.
Nice,
because
yeah.
we get a lot of wind here in the winter, and I see a lot of soil, bare soil blowing
mm-hmm.
in the wintertime around
yeah.
here, and it's going to Kansas because there's nothing but a barbed wire fence between here and there. So
right.
it's any cover crop is the ideal is to try to keep the soil covered 100% of the time, 100% covered.
Wow.
Cover crops,
that's
good
a great way
to
think
do
about it,
is to try to keep it covered all the time because it's such a precious resource and so easy to lose here where it's in a dry climate.
Yeah.
I know. It breaks my heart when I drive around and I see people tilling their fields and the big clouds of dust behind them and mm-hmm. I just go, oh, man.
Yeah.
Well, it's why we're talking about it, and you
yeah.
see people doing more of it all the time.
Yeah,
so I love
yeah.
that that's happening.
No, that's what all
mm-hmm.
it takes.
Yeah,
it just takes
exactly.
putting it out there.
Putting it out there.
Yeah.
And it is slowing down. I'm
yeah.
seeing a lot more corn farmers leaving stubble through the winter
mm-hmm.
now even than I used to 20 years ago
mm-hmm.
when I first came here. Lots of stubble fields. They may bale it, but at least they're not – they'll
Whacking
wait till the spring
yeah.
to till because
mm-hmm.
we don't typically have wet springs. Here.
No,
it's
no,
pretty
not
dry.
No, where you can't get
dry.
In there to the
yeah.
dirt. No, it's.
I remember listening to an agricultural radio show from years ago from KBNF, and I forget the name of the show, but they had somebody on talking about it, and they were saying, oh, yeah, we got to bale the corn because it's a waste product. And it's, yeah. No, it's not a waste product.
Yeah.
That was their mentality, is that we got to get rid of it.
And some guys sell it because it's, times are tough and the price of corn is way down this year, so they want a little bit of extra money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of hurting the soil at the same time. Mm-hmm. It's not putting anything back in at all. It's taking everything out.
And so there you are in the spring, and there's your soil covered with the stubble and leftover of your cover crop. And you don't till. You just drill your seeds right into that?
Yes. Yeah. It depends. A lot of it depends on the irrigation system.
Ah.
And because if you have furrow irrigation, it's kind of tough to get furrow through no-till. But now they have special tools, of course, that you can buy from your local implement dealer that will clear the furrows in no-till. So it just does a little bit of clearing. It doesn't really plow them all up. So you can keep doing no-till and still do furrow irrigation. They're working on it all the time. But there's three or four implements right now that work fairly well. They've been testing them down in the Uncompahgre Valley for a few years now, the Soil and Conservation District. And they've had some pretty good results, because that's one of the big complaints, because everybody has furrow irrigation. Yeah. How do you do no-till with furrows? Yeah. It works great if you got sprinklers, but it's tougher with furrows. But they're making it work, because they want to go to no-till or as close as they can.
Yeah, and it just seems to me that with the water becoming more and more scarce, it's going to become more and more important to have a really high-tech sprinkler.
Yeah, sprinkler system, and then more organic matter.
That, but
we're not going to have a choice if we want to grow.
It's adapt or die.
Yeah. Right, and the water that's been allotted, if it shrinks in half because we just don't have the water, you're going to have to farm either less ground or become
a lot smarter,
more efficient on the same amount of ground, which means drip and sprinkler to make that work.
Yeah.
And actually watering at specific times,
right?
Not all day long.
No, just in the early morning, so it gets in the ground and the plants can take it up and use it all day, and it doesn't evaporate.
Or just before you come in to do As the Worm Turns, you're out there watering, and then my theory is always, and then you've got all night for that water to soak in, and the plants are ready to go first thing in the morning.
That's one way to look at it.
Uh-oh, I'm getting the evil eye.
I don't recommend overnight watering.
There you go.
I recommend a late, like maybe start at 3 in the morning or 5 in the morning.
Oh, Santa Maria.
But be done. I know, it's tough. But you want to be done. There's several reasons. You want to be done watering before the sun comes out and the wind starts blowing, because you're going to lose a lot of water just through evaporation. Yeah. But if you plants at night breathe, like the opposite of what they do during the day, they take in oxygen and let out carbon dioxide through their root systems. But if it's always, if it's wet, I mean, you can do it, if you're just irrigating once a week or once every 10 days, it's fine. But if people tend to over-irrigate.
Who doesn't? Yeah. I do.
It's easy to do.
And it's easy to kill a plant if you see a whole plant turning yellow, it may be you're watering too much. It needs to get that oxygen through the root system at night. But if you're watering all night, it's not getting that, because it's just the roots are just in water all night. Or you'll see this in low spots if you're watering. So I recommend early morning is the best time, because then you get all the water in the ground before the sun comes out, or right when it comes out, so the plant can start taking it up right away as soon as you're done watering.
Right.
That's just my opinion. I'm sure there's other opinions out there, but you don't want to keep the roots in water overnight. It's
That's not the goal.
Right. I know your goal is to make it nice, turn it on before you go to bed at night, and shut it off in the morning. It's terrific.
No. Just go out. No, I don't have any more irrigation water, so I'm just watering by hand.
Sprinkle.
And, and there's plenty of dry ground for that water to go into, trust me. And in the summertime, I water. My sprinklers are usually done by, 11 o'clock or so, noon-ish.
Mm-hmm.
The cycle has all, they've all run through their cycle.
Yeah, I stop water, if I'm watering in the evening, I stop watering at 8:30.
Yeah, that's fine. That's no worries.
I'm done.
Right.
Yeah, me too. That, I mean, yeah, I don't like to stay out there, especially in the summer, high summer. After dark, it's too late. It's I got to go in and have a beverage.
We're always, we're always going to be talking about watering. Yeah. Because, you know, that's the thing. Times will be a-changing. Yeah, we have an email here from Eileen in Paonia who wants some advice on raspberries. It sounds like she's had a pretty good harvest this year and wondering when and if to cut back the canes. When's the best time to apply compost? Any other additives? And are blackberries any different than raspberries?
Yeah, well, as far as cutting them back, it depends on if they're prima canes or not. Okay. Prima canes, you cut to the ground.
Prima canes.
Yeah.
How do you tell the difference? What's the one I'm looking at?
Either you bought them and you put them in, or they're have old an old bed and it's probably not them.
Yeah. Prima canes are the kind that you cut to the ground now or after frost, and they'll come up in spring. They'll start blooming in mid to late July, and they keep on going till frost. That's the variety I have. And then the other kind is you actually get two crops a year. You get a spring crop from the canes that were from wintered over. And then when they're dead, when they're done producing, you cut those to the ground, and new shoots have come up. And those will bloom for a small fall crop, winter over, and be a spring crop. And I'm sorry, I don't know what that name of those ones are.
Okay.
I don't either.
So you have to find the variety that you have. And you can make all of them prima canes. If you want to go and cut them all down, it's fine.
What about composting?
I wouldn't encourage any growth now. I would do it till after frost.
After frost.
Yeah.
After the 3-hour dormancy. Yeah,
because if you fertilize real heavily now, they're going to start growing, and then they're going to winter kill.
They're going to winter kill.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good
advice. Yes. Pretty normal with just about everything, trees or any crop. You don't want to fertilize late.
Okay, yeah. Good to know.
Because then they won't shut down. Mm-hmm. They won't shut down and they'll winter kill or hurt them.
Yeah, and raspberries like water.
They like water.
So if you can, water them before the ground freezes.
Right, one of those shrubs and bushes that you want to leave some water in this winter.
The difference between blackberries and raspberries?
I'm not experienced with blackberries.
I'm not either. Color. Yeah. Size and color.
I don't know. I don't know that's, anything about berries.
They're much more rampant growers, so I suspect you could fertilize them more.
A blackberry? Yeah, I think so, too. And they have those big – the fruits are completely different. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But the general attitude is the same.
Yeah.
You know.
And they bloom on second-year growth.
Yeah. So yours.
Oh, okay. Bloom on second-year growth. Yeah.
The spring growth of this year is next year's crop.
All right.
Cool.
All right.
That was close enough, right, Eileen? Mm-hmm.
Good information. Yes. Thanks for your email, Eileen. And
yeah, thanks.
Love to taste some of your berries.
hit.
Right.
Yeah, bring them
we'll
in.
We'll be here next Tuesday at 6:30. Right. But we appreciate you listening. And Ron, thanks so much for being here. Ron Godin, soil scientist.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Always good to have you. Always great to have you on. Gosh, I love it. Learned so much.
Have a good trip.
Yep.
Thanks, I will, and we'll report back in the spring.
All right, that sounds good.
Yeah, sounds like a plan.
All right, it's One Woman's Perspective coming up next. Thanks for listening to As the Worm Turns on KBNF.
Have a good evening.
Good night, everybody.